This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Say what you will about our increasing loss of privacy in the face of big data. Many of us are giving up any claim to privacy about what we do or say on the internet voluntarily. Case in point, the website postsecret.com, where people divulge the most intimate details of their lives. The creator of the website is in Charlotte for the opening of a new stage play, Post Secret, the show, based on his website, and he joins us later this hour. First, Charlotte recently experienced its first major political scandal when former Mayor Patrick Cannon was arrested on federal corruption charges. He had only been mayor since December when he resigned last month, and the appointment of former state senator Dan Clodfelter to fill the remainder of his two-year term is unusual for Charlotte because Mr. Clodfelter becomes our fourth mayor in a single year. Anthony Fox left to become Secretary of Transportation in the Obama administration. Councilwoman Patsy Kinsey filled out his term until Cannon was elected in November and took over in December. But who is Dan Clodfelter? What kind of a mayor might he be? What can we expect from him? And how do we get past this Cannon mess? We've invited two reporters who have been covering this to join us, Ben Bradford from WFAE News and Steve Harrison, a reporter covering city issues for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back to both of you.
Good. Hey, thanks for having us.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Let me turn your mic on so you can be heard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, we invited Mr. Clodfelter to join us today, but he declined, citing a need to get up to speed. So, instead, let us start by listening to a short interview WFAE's Tom Bullock had with the new mayor shortly after taking office.
I met Dan Clodfelter in his new office, the same office raided by FBI agents just 2 weeks ago, and where former Mayor Patrick Cannon is accused of taking $20,000 in a leather briefcase delivered by an undercover agent. The city council appointed Clodfelter to serve as mayor until December of 2015, the remainder of Cannon's term.
The council members were very open at the fact that you and other candidates for the job called to lobby for votes. And I'm just curious what you did tell them.
Well, I didn't tell them anything that they didn't ask. What I did was offer to meet or to talk, to answer questions. There are council members that knew me, and there are council members that didn't know me and that I didn't know. And I wanted to be sure everybody had a fair chance to sort of go through with me anything they wanted to know about me or ask of me before they thought about it.
So what did they ask?
Everything under the sun, probably everything that you would ask or are asking or ever will ask.
One of the questions I'm wondering if they asked is this. There are a number of sitting council members that reportedly are interested in seeking the mayor's office in 2015. Did you ever promise to not run, or were you ever asked not to run?
Some of them asked me, not all of them, but some of them said, would you not run in 2015? I said, look, I don't have any plans to run in 2015. I also said to them, though, I said, you know, if we get down the road and you guys think this is working out pretty cool and I like it too, I would look at a little more, but not much.
You are taking office after an unprecedented political scandal. What is your role as you see it? I mean, after the scandal, is it bully pulpit leader? Is it backseat to the council? Is it public relations for the city? How do you see it?
Well, there are several roles. The mayor, it does represent the city to the public outside of Charlotte and to the world at large, and the mayor does assist the council in trying to find its own center and trying to find its voice and its vision. I've said the mayor's somewhat like an orchestra conductor. He doesn't make the music, but he keeps the orchestra together so its voice fills the hall. That I don't consider, by the way, being backseat, I will tell you. I intend to be an engaged mayor, but not a mayor who tries to drive the council.
Well, and you bring up a couple of interesting points here. I mean, the first of which, through no fault of your own, the way that you received this office, you were appointed, you did not run, you do not have a mandate from the population. You also weren't able to provide to the people of Charlotte basically a platform of what you would like to do. Well, I'm wondering now, what would your platform be? What would you like to see happen here?
Now you're going to get me in trouble here because you're now asking the Christmas list, wish list kind of question, and that's not what I'm going to do, is not have a Christmas wish list. Look, Tom, there are an awful lot of things I've been involved in over the years as a council member first, and then as a state legislator. And there's you look at that track record, you pretty well see sort of where my inclinations and my interests lie. I've always been very big on planning and on neighborhood development and neighborhood revitalization. Those have been important to me, and there's no secret about it. So if the council has an interest in that issue, I'm going to be right there with them.
And you do have the experience between the city and the state legislature. I'm wondering what that relationship is like, though, now between heavily Democratic Charlotte and a legislature that is obviously significantly Republican.
Right. One of the great things to me that I discovered in the legislature was regardless of party divisions within the legislative delegation, we generally tended to come together as a delegation for issues that were important in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
I am wondering, though, with an issue like the airport, if the Patrick Cannon scandal may hurt the city's chances of trying to keep control of Charlotte-Douglas International.
Well, I would hope it doesn't. I would be surprised if it did, because the things that have been put in the accusations against Mr. Cannon have nothing to do with the airport. And so I would be very disappointed if that issue played into the airport matters.
My last question is, are you aware that your mustache has a Twitter handle?
I'm not aware of that, no. And the handle is?
Mayor Stash. It's at Mayor Stash. Any comments for your mustache when it comes to the Twitter account?
I think it's very creative. I promise to take good care of it.
Mayor, thank you for joining
us. Thank you.
That's WFAE's Tom Bullock with Mayor Claude Felter maybe a week ago. We are working right now to get the mayor on the future program, but today we're just going to talk about him with Ben Bradford from WFAE News and Steve Harrison from the Charlotte Observer. How did Dan Claude Felter emerge as the council's choice? I don't know who to ask that question of.
I think we should let Steve take that one. He'll have the inside track on what was happening with the council.
There were two factions on the city council. One wanted James Mitchell to be appointed mayor. Mm-hmm. And that group on the council had been more supportive of Anthony Fox and had not really been supporters of Patrick Cannon. And they felt, James ran against Patrick in the Democratic mayoral primary, so it's his turn. And there was another group that I think really wanted to kind of bring in an outsider and have a fresh start.
And he also, Claude Felter also really kind of campaigned for this, internally among the people who were voting, which is the city council. He was, their phones were ringing from Mitchell and from Claude Felter, from Jennifer Roberts, the former county chairwoman. He really went out to get this job.
Yeah, and I think he wanted it. I think he was interested in running last fall. And as we understand, he kind of took a poll and tested the waters, and he did not fare well.
So this is the second appointed mayor in a year. So what were they looking for on council? Because this is a non-elected official now.
Right. Well, I think it's very different, though, from the last one, right? You think about last time, it was Anthony Fox was going to a position of prestige. He was being appointed the Secretary of Transportation. Mm-hmm. And he had he had 4 months left in his term? A few more. And so they were really looking for somebody who could, keep the seat warm, keep pushing the policies forward that they were still doing, someone who had the insider knowledge. And that was Patsy Kinsey. And we knew straight up. If you heard Tom's interview where Claude Felter says that, he leaves the door open for a future run for mayor. Yeah. Very, very clearly. Whereas Patsy Kinsey was very definitive about that she was not going to run. And in this case, so I think that they're looking for somebody very, very different, because while she was sort of a seat holder, in this case, you have somebody who's going to do the majority of the rest of this term. We're 4 months into a 2-year term,
right.
And you need somebody who can be a face for the city, who's going to need to take some positions over time. And I think that, right, the idea of getting an outsider, getting somebody who's off the council, somebody with experience, and also particularly with what's happening in this kind of conflict that we've seen emerge between well, more so than usual, I guess, between Charlotte and state lawmakers, somebody who really has knowledge of the legislature and has those contacts makes sense.
Claude Filter told the Charlotte Business Journal that it is business as usual in Charlotte, and that nothing going on has anything to do with the one-day blip of Patrick Cannon. This is not Chicago. I think this was covered, the resignation and the arrest of Patrick Cannon was covered by one network, NBC, that I know of. Maybe CNN picked it up as well. But the other two television networks didn't talk about it at all. So is this going to have an impact at all outside of the city? Do businesses thinking about coming here really care?
I think it has an impact. Is Charlotte seen as Chicago? No. I mean, that isn't the case. But I do think it matters. And, the city really, in the aftermath of the arrest, kind of really bent over backwards to break out, I kind of joke, the organizational chart and stress, the weak mayor. And they kind of went out of their way to portray the mayor as this, like,
figurehead
with no power. Like, why do we even have them? Because, clearly he can't do this. And, the city will do that at times when the mayor steps in it and say, well, clearly, this person has no power. They can't even tie their shoes. the city became really defensive that nothing, it was an isolated incident.
Yeah. But with that said, I mean, I think that more than there are two things. One is that if there was this idea that in the business community there was a pay-to-play environment. Mm-hmm. You got to remember, this is not a one-day blip, right? This is a four-year sting operation that was conducted and didn't start because of Patrick Cannon. It started because the FBI was looking into the business community. So I think that the more of a problem will be moving forward will be that I think we can expect to see other investigations of the FBI wrapping up. And depending on what we see from those, if there are more arrests and if they trickle out, that more than anything could undermine business in Charlotte.
And given the fact that they went out of their way, they tripped over themselves to say how powerless the mayor is, I'm just curious why Dan Clodfelter, a former city council member back years ago and now several terms in the state Senate, wanted the job.
I think he's a Democrat, and now in Raleigh, he's in the minority party, and that probably makes his job or being a state senator a lot less fun. And I think at some point you get tired of driving up and down I-85, and just kind of a more enjoyable, maybe an easier job and a change of pace.
Sure, and think about where the last two mayors are. I mean, I don't know about his specific ambition, but right, one of our last mayors, the Secretary of Transportation, the mayor before that is the governor of North Carolina.
Right. What kind of record did he have in the Senate? What were his issues? What kinds of legislation did he try to put through, or did he support strongly?
I asked him in an interview soon after he was appointed about some issues, whether he would support like an additional tax for transit, for instance. And mm-hmm. he kind of went into a huge, very wonkish answer about tax reform. And, he worked a lot with finance issues, but it was a very in-the-weeds issue about reforming the tax system to bring more revenues for the cities. And so he's known as a really smart guy who won't give sound bites and flippant answers.
Right. Please. It is interesting on the if you listen to Tom's interview, though, because, yeah, he was on the finance committee, but he has been very specific. And even him declining to come on the show, you said he cited the need to get up to speed. I mean, that's sort of been his line all along.
Well, in fact, he has been described as prickly and as someone who does not suffer fools well, which explains why he's not on the program today. But we are working to get Dan Clodfelter on a future program. We're talking to Ben Bradford from WFAE News and Steve Harrison from the Charlotte Observer about the new mayor, and we will continue our conversation in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Charlotte Eye, Ear, Nose, and Throat Associates, providing complete and comprehensive care for infants to seniors in eye, ENT, audiology, allergy, and sleep medicine for 90 years. Details at goodsenses.com. Well, you know, end-of-life issues have gotten a lot of attention. We've done a number of programs on end-of-life issues. We used to be afraid of talking about death, not so much anymore. And what we've turned the conversation now toward is what constitutes a good death. But there's another side to this spectrum that has been completely ignored, just evidently, and that is what constitutes a good birth. How about that? It seems that the only people interested in that are pregnant women. And boy, are they interested. And in the dark, in many cases. And we'll talk about that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Ian Rehm Show, in a phone call this week, President Obama warned Russian President Vladimir Putin against further aggression into Ukraine. As tension mounts between Russia and Ukraine, understanding the political motivations of Vladimir Putin.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about our new mayor, Dan Clodfelter, with the two reporters who have been covering him and the goings-on that led to his appointment by City Council, Ben Bradford from WFAE News, Steve Harrison from the Charlotte Observer. In the mayor's conversation, which we heard earlier with Tom Bullock from WFAE News, he said that he intends to be an engaged mayor, but not one who drives the council. What does that mean?
I think it speaks to the kind of tricky position that he's in, right? I mean, you heard Tom ask him about his platform, and he kind of deferred back from talking about well, he doesn't have a Christmas wish list. But, you know, a platform is more than that. A platform is not just, oh, what are the things I would like to see happen? It's, you know, what do I like to pursue? And he's talked before about being into neighborhood development and wanting to encourage more of that. But he was elected by the city council. So I think that, you know, especially in the first few months as he's kind of reinserting himself into a role that he hasn't played in 20 years, he needs to figure out.
Mm-hmm. But I don't mean to
no, please.
You, but if you don't drive the council, what do you do? Because you only vote to break a tie. You're like the vice president in the Senate or wherever the vice president is. What do you do if you don't drive the council?
You know, when Anthony Fox was elected, I mean, right from the get-go, like, he had these bold vision. He wanted to combine city and county government. And, I mean, I think, you know, Anthony knew he was going to be here for a short amount of time and he wanted to make his mark. But, you know, Patrick Cannon kind of in his first 4 months, I kind of see it as he played small ball. I mean, apart from any of his legal troubles, he just kind of, you know, staff can drive the agenda and mm-hmm. you can kind of run a meeting and try and get out in front of a few issues and get some credit for it. In my interview with Clodfelter, there was, I think, one interesting point that'll come up in the next year. The city, there's kind of this artificial deadline with the Carolina Panthers mm-hmm. where the city can bring forward more money and they can get an extension on the amount of time the team will play here. And the mayor said he won't be a part of that because he works for Moore and Van Allen, and Moore and Van Allen represents the Panthers. So it'll be interesting to see kind of who on council, someone has to kind of step up and be the cheerleader for that and either take the praise or probably take some hits on that one, and it will not be the mayor.
Which might bode well if he wants to run for election in 2 years, I suppose. But Patsy Kinsey, as a temporary seat filler for Anthony Fox, did not drive the council. As you just said, Patrick Cannon didn't really drive the council. Now, Dan Clodfelter said he won't drive the council. So we're talking about 3 years of no mayors driving the bus. Is that healthy for Charlotte?
Well, I think that the most important decision that they've made in a long time was when they did their city manager search. And it was very different from city manager searches they've done before, which is that they really were looking for an outside candidate. And they did this national search, and they hired Ron Carley, who's current city manager, and came in from Arlington, Virginia, and was the head of this this nonprofit that's all about basically city manager and county manager management. And I think that you've seen since he's come in that he is, I mean, not necessarily driving the general agenda, but certainly shaping how the general ideas that they have and how they're going to put those forward.
Do you think that over time, though, right now I think he's being very political by saying, I'm not going to drive the council, I know that I'm not elected, blah, blah, blah. But as he settles into the job and the days tick on and he becomes comfortable with that nice office on the top of the government center, overviewing all that he surveys, ruling all that he surveys, do you think that he'll begin to impact or let his opinions be known and start to drive the bus?
I think so. In his very first meeting, he was sworn in a week ago, and the city had a budget meeting that afternoon, and they had this list of that the manager put forward about $200 million of new projects, which came kind of a year after a tax increase. And so a lot of the council members were already uneasy about that, and they were pushing back. And the mayor, you know, he kind of made an offhand comment, you know, that this presentation wasn't ready for prime time. And that doesn't seem like a lot, a big statement, but once you become mayor, you often become very protective of city staff. Then you feel like you have to work together,
right,
and they almost become joined at a hip. And so I do think that kind of comment was telling, and that as he gets more comfortable and moving forward, that I think he's going to give his opinion and be a little more out there.
Yeah, and that's an interesting moment also, because, I mean, that was Ron Carley driving that meeting and really kind of presenting something in a fashion that the council didn't like. They essentially, what he was doing was saying, well, here's all the different projects that we could spend money on in the city, and that comes up to, you know, $200 odd million, like Steve said, and the council kind of didn't really like, well, you know, how do we choose between all of these mm-hmm. things? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so this idea that then Klodfelter is going to comes in and is going to have an opinion on it, and also is going to correct the city manager. I mean, there's certainly it says something about their statuses.
One of the first controversial issues to arise since his appointment is the business privilege tax. Most people have never heard of that. He says it is antiquated, and the legislature is in discussions to cap the tax, which would reduce city revenues by about $17 million. Since he has his feet in both camps, the legislature and now in the city of Charlotte, what else is he saying about this?
Right. I think that it's a business tax that the city gets about $17 million of revenue from. And he says it's antiquated. He says he doesn't like it. But at the same time, he still says he doesn't like what the legislature is doing. Basically, regardless of what the city does right now is they can tax gross receipts and they can go up to $10,000. Like you said, the legislature wants it to be $100. That's a big hit. So he, as mayor, he's going to want to find a way to get that revenue back, regardless of how they do it.
He was, of course, a member of the Mecklenburg County senatorial delegation to the legislature, as is Bob Russo from Matthews, and they're on opposite sides of this struggle over the airport. Klodfelter says he doesn't think the troubles that Patrick Cannon had with the Justice Department will impact the legislature's thinking on the airport. But Bob Russo says it's another indication of why an airport authority is needed. So where will this go, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, Russo is a supporter first of the airport authority, and then which later became the airport commission.
It's kind of his baby.
It is absolutely his baby,
yeah.
And I think that, you know, that it's kind of played into his hands. It's a great talking point to say, well, listen, you know, we were trying to create, make this thing independent, see what happened. McCrory was asked, and Steve, it might have been you who asked him about, you know, were there any conversations about Cannon involved with the decision to try to create this independent body to oversee the airport? And he said no.
Now, I know the Democrats are out of power in Raleigh, and Dan Klodfelter is a Democrat, but we've always had this very tenuous relationship the city of Charlotte has and Mecklenburg County has with Raleigh. They don't like us. We don't particularly care for them. We could secede. But we have lost a state senator. What kind of clout have we lost in Raleigh, and can that be made up for with a guy who knows what buttons to push and levers to pull and people to talk to in Raleigh?
It was interesting on I guess it was the day after the mayor was appointed. Governor McCrory was in Charlotte, and they met up in the mayor's office. And the governor was so happy that Klodfelter was mayor I mean, he was just going out of his way over and over again. You know, I've invited him to spend the night at the governor's mansion like it was a sleepover. I mean, he just would not stop about how thrilled he was because he and Anthony Fox did not like each other. I think he had a fine relationship with Patsy Kinsey and a little better relationship with Patrick Cannon.
Patrick Cannon was Pat McCrory's brother's little brother in the Big Brothers Big Sisters program. So they know each other really well. They were on the program together about 2 months ago. So, yeah. And then, of course, Pat McCrory has a relationship with Dan Clodfelter because they both served on council at the same time back in the early days, years and years and years ago. So there is a relationship there.
There is a relationship, and I think it's a good relationship. And whether it on the airport issue it will be enough to kind of change the equation and come up with a compromise, I don't know, because if you're on the side of wanting an airport commission and taking it from the city it's hard to – I'm not sure if there's any way out. I don't know if there is a scenario someone can come up with that you could still feel like you've won.
Well, Dan Clodfelter, the new mayor, supports the Lynx Blue Line extension to the University City area, which is a good thing because it's underway. He supports the Streetcar Gold Line, which is also, from the looks of things on Trade Street, quite obviously underway. He supports Charlotte retaining control of the airport. He says that he hopes to have some dialogue with his former colleagues in the legislature to let them know that removing city control would not be good for the state. Not for Charlotte, but for the state. Do we know where he stands on other key issues? The Panther – he can't talk about the Panther issue, so.
Right. He says he won't be a part of that. And in terms of some of the other issues, you know, it's unclear. The city has to decide what they want to do with Eastland Mall, the former mall. They spent $13.2 million, and they seem to be at a dead end.
The Bojangles, this idea of creating an amateur sports complex, right. That's underway. He's going to have to be part of for the future decisions there.
The Charlotte Bobcats have put in a list for about $44 million of renovations at their arena, and the city is going to have to pay for some of that contractually, but some of that they can probably push back on. And so will the mayor kind of take I don't want to say combative. That may be a little too strong, but will he kind of resist some of their requests? Or, we're just going to have to see. I don't know. I don't think he knows.
So before I let you go and we move on to post secrets, where do we stand on the Patrick Cannon investigation? The arrest happened completely out of the blue to all of us. It was a very well-kept secret. It happened overnight. He literally resigned hours after his arrest. And then everything went dark. There would have been or should have been or we thought there would be a grand jury hearing by now, but there hasn't been, and people say that's indicative of something going on. So where do we stand?
Well, the first thing that happened was that Cannon got James Ferguson, who's a very well-respected longtime attorney in Charlotte, and they waived their right to a preliminary hearing, I think it was. But essentially what it has the effect of doing is it means that the grand jury does not have to indict immediately. So it's entirely possible that there's conversations going on behind the scenes for some kind of deal. I don't know that, but that's certainly a possibility for a reason we haven't seen in an indictment yet.
How and when will Dan Clodfelter's successor in the Senate be chosen?
That is a great question. I think that we've seen some candidates come out, but it's still kind of – the field's still kind of unclear.
Really? Is he appointed by the mayor? I mean the governor, rather? Does he have to be a Democrat? We don't know. There are not rules that govern this kind of thing?
I'm sure there are rules for it. I might have to go back and look over to it.
Okay. I don't want to throw you for a loop here. Ben Bradford from WFAE News and Steve Harrison, city reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Thank you both for the time.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Well, they say that you can determine a person's character by what they do when no one is looking. And it turns out a lot of people are doing a lot of things that you wouldn't suspect when no one is looking. And they don't mind spilling their guts about it anonymously online on a website called PostSecret.com. It's the brainchild of Frank Warren, who set up the site a few years ago. It's since taken the internet by storm as people confess to serious, sometimes frivolous, sometimes provocative, even scandalous behaviors. This online confessional can make for great reading, but will material derived from it make for a great night in the theater? We are about to find out. This week, Charlotte is home to the final rehearsals for Post Secret The Show, which will open on April 22nd at the Booth Playhouse. Frank Warren's in town for those rehearsals and joins us for the remainder of the program. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte.
Oh, Mike, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I saw your TED Talk years, I don't know how long it's been up there on YouTube, but I saw it a long time before I ever knew about Post Secret and a long time before I ever knew you were going to be on this program or in Charlotte. It's a wonderful talk.
Well, thank you. I think there's something about these secrets that's just super compelling. People are so vulnerable with the funny, the painful, the hopeful, the sexual, the surprising. And if I can just convey that courage, I think that can be a special thing.
You can tell that in the talk. That's what makes it so – because a lot of these people that throw up these websites that let people say anything about anyone, anywhere – kind of do it with a mean streak, and you have invested yourself, I think, emotionally, and I don't know how, I don't know how to describe it, but you've invested yourself in this. You care about these people, and you seem to care about what they're saying.
Well, I feel like people have trusted me with their deepest secrets, maybe secrets they haven't told a spouse or a parent or psychiatrist, and it's a great privilege to be in this position, and I want to make sure I always protect the trust they've entrusted in me.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this did not start out to be a website, did it?
It started as an art project outside of Washington, D.C. about 10 years ago. I printed up 3,000 self-addressed postcards inviting strangers to write down a story, a secret they'd never shared with anyone before, and mail it to my home. I handed them out to strangers on the sidewalk, soliciting secrets at night. It felt pretty strange at the time, but I had this faith in the idea that...
Where did you put the postcards so that people would pick them up, write them down, mail them in to you? Where did you do that?
Well, at that time in my life, I was a small business owner for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And at night, I would drive from my suburban home to the sidewalks of Washington, D.C., and just walk up to strangers. And with these postcards, hand them out. Hi, my name's Frank, and I collect secrets. Yeah, it felt as weird as it sounds. Some people would laugh. Other people would take several. Some people would say, I don't have any secrets. But I always made sure they took a postcard because I believe they have the best ones.
And people actually began to send these postcards back to you. What was your intent when you did this? What did you want to do with the postcards when you got them?
Well, my hope was to receive about 100 or so. And slowly they started trickling back to my home mailbox with postmarks from Washington, D.C., and I would scan a few and put them on the web, and then the idea began to spread virally across the country, around the world, and people began to buy their own postcards, make their own postcards. The postmarks were coming from Brisbane, Hong Kong, wow. Iraq, and after 10 years, I've received over 500,000 of these secrets from all over.
Now, I grew up in the Washington area, and I know that if you live in Alexandria or you live in Silver Spring or someplace like that, People say, where are you from? You say Washington, because it's just easier. So you're coming from suburban Maryland or suburban Virginia, and you're going into the city. Why didn't you go into the area around your home? Why drive into the city?
I think the number of people, it was easier to catch people off metro, or maybe it was leaving kind of where I was from, my identity there, and kind of taking on this other identity, because it did feel weird for this suburban father, husband, small business owner, after work and on weekends to pursue this postcard art project. If you'd asked me why I was doing it at the time, I would not have been able to give you a good answer.
Because it's kind of creepy if you don't know about it and you don't know what the outcome of it is, it's kind of creepy.
You can imagine it being in that direction. Until you see the nature of these secrets, until you see the artwork and read the confessions and really understand the spirit and soul of Post Secret. In fact, in some ways, my mom didn't really like what I was doing until she saw the book.
Right. So it became, and I've seen the book. I think that's where what directed me to your TED Talk. The postcards have now migrated to the web, and now they're migrating to the stage. And when we come back, we'll talk to Frank Warren about all of that. And what kind of a play could this possibly be? Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members on the Charlotte Area Transit System. Public transit benefits more than just commuters. It also creates jobs through private development, which generates tax revenues for schools, roads, and more. Details at ridetransit.org. And Founders Federal Credit Union, an innovative credit union with 24 offices across the Carolinas and over 90 ATMs in its network. Information available at foundersfcu.com. As tension mounts between Russia and the Ukraine, understanding the political motivations of Vladimir Putin becomes more important, and that will be the topic of the conversation at 10 in 20 minutes on the Diane Rehm Show. When we come back, post-secret the show. Perhaps you've investigated the website. Well, we're talking about how you turn that into a stage play, which is happening in Charlotte beginning next week. We're coming right back.
When you turn on the faucet and clear, cool water comes out, you may not think about all the things that can affect the Charlotte region's water quality.
The most pervasive is sediment. That's just dirt. It fills in the lakes, it clouds up the water, it makes it difficult for fish to breathe.
Join WFAE for What's in Our Water, a public conversation on the Charlotte area's water quality. Tuesday evening, April 22nd at the Levine Center for the Arts. Details and registration are at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Frank Warren is our guest. He's an artist. He's an author. He is the creator of PostSecret.com, and he is in town for the final rehearsals this week of a production called PostSecret the Show, which we're about to talk about, but he has shared with me the latest of the postcards that have come to him through the mail. One says, "I always thought Pilates was some type of French dessert." Here's one that's particularly provocative from my point of view. "I've had sex dreams about people on the radio. theater productions make me horny." I took a couple from the front page of your website yesterday. One read, "I'm 52 years old. I had phone sex for the first time. I liked it." Another, "I shave every day. I'm a 34-year-old woman." Another, "TV and movies are my escape from reality. It is the only way I am able to stop myself from thinking about you." Another, "I constantly live my life as if people from my life, dead or alive, are watching me." I've heard somebody say that they always conduct their life as though they're on television, that cameras are following them down the street.
I've received that secret as well. And you can see by that short little selection, the secrets can touch on very different emotions, these personal stories that we have. In some cases, I think they can be burdensome. And if we can't find a way to let them go, maybe a postcard can help.
Yeah. There's another one on your website which has a picture of the Duke University Chapel, which I thought we should talk about because Duke is here. "Sometimes I wish," the postcard says, "sometimes I wish I had the courage to throw myself off the top of this chapel. I'd ask for help, but no one actually cares. No one actually understands. Everyone is self-absorbed in their own lives."
Really gets you in the heart, and it makes you feel for that student and for anybody who feels alone with a burden, with a secret like that. When I started the project, I didn't know where it would go. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, one of the places it has taken me are towards these confessions of sorrow, of loneliness, of struggling with mental illness. And so what I've tried to do on the website is create these resources people can use to get more information, feel connected, find ways of hope. And so that's been one of the optimistic parts of the project.
And I'm not sure how you do this, but in your TED Talk, you talked about getting back in touch with people. And there have been spin-off websites for this. I think that there's somebody found a camera and with somebody's photographs on it, and it's led to a whole thing. It could take it on a life of its own. But you have responded back to people, and people have an ongoing online relationship with you.
Yeah. It's not so much me, I think, but when people feel these confessions, when they see the secrets, they want to reach out. They want to let the person know they're not alone, or they want to let them feel compassion, connection. I've got a postcard here that came in. It was a secret written on a photograph, and you can see a young boy playing in some shallow water. And the secret says, "I don't tell anyone he has Tourette's, and I, OCD, I am ashamed that I passed it on. I'm sorry, buddy." Mm. And I posted that secret on the website, and I got an email the same day from somebody who wrote, "My mother passed Tourette's on to me. She also passed on to me the courage to deal with it. And then the woman who sent me this original postcard responded back to that message, and she wrote, "I write this letter to you with tears rolling down my cheeks. I am the mom who sent the postcard about my son having Tourette's and OCD. The person who wrote in and said that their mom gave them the courage to deal with their Tourette's, you don't know how much you helped me. I pray that I can give my boy the courage to continue to face this. I pray that I can continue to face it too."
Wow. According to Wikipedia, if you believe them, PostSecret.com has no restrictions on the content of whatever secret someone wants to share, only that it be truthful and never spoken before. Of course, there's no way for you to tell that anybody hasn't spilled their guts on this topic someplace else, but how do you know it's the truth? How do you know you're not being played?
That's a good question. I think there's no way really to know if it's fiction or nonfiction. I think that the amount of effort it takes actually to get a postcard, decorate it, choose the words to take ownership of your secret and let it go, I think that acts, that ritual acts as a way to really allow some special secrets to come in. But in some ways too, you know, I've had people send me emails that say, one person in particular said, "When I saw the website, I was so moved by it. I wanted to get on. I wanted to create a post-secret secret. So I made this postcard that I thought you would put on the website." And he said, sure enough, you did. But when the postcard had been mailed to you, it had been damaged in the mail process. Some of the words had been pulled away. The meaning had changed on the postcard.
Oh, okay.
And he said, the secret that I mailed in, that you actually posted on the web, turned out to be a true secret from my life, even though it wasn't my intent. So sometimes the most kind of subversive element of post-secret is the idea that you think you're sharing the secret with a stranger on a postcard, but really, the first person you have to come out to about that confession is yourself.
Wow. As this has migrated, as it migrated to the web, people are still sending you postcards. They're not just typing in something on a screen and hitting send. So what are they? How does it work? They still send you postcards. You scan them in and put them up on the web.
Yeah, actually, don't take secrets, created online through text. People mail me a postcard. It comes to my home address in my mailbox. I read every secret. I keep every postcard. Mike, I've got a pyramid of postcards in my basement taller than you. It's a 500,000, literally like a half ton of people's confessions, and they come every day.
It's a fire hazard, Frank.
It could be.
Now, as we've been listening to some of the comments, some of the secrets that have been shared by people over the years on these postcards, it has become abundantly clear to me, and became clear to me yesterday, that they're about a sentence long, maybe two. How do you make a play out of that?
Yeah, there's definitely a haiku nature to what people are sharing with me. But as we've touched on already, there are some fascinating stories that play out based upon a secret that can be shared that just resonates with people. So you mentioned one story, the camera story.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a secret I received from somebody. They found a digital camera, and they had the pictures developed, and they made a secret out of one of those photos and said, "I found your camera at Lollapalooza. I wish I could return it to you." And you see these six or seven young people really enjoying the moment. I posted that secret on the web, and a student was inspired to start his own website, a website that he calls I Found Your Camera. And Maddie invites strangers from all over the world to mail him lost cameras, orphan memory sticks. He takes those pictures, puts them on the web, and hundreds of people have had their photos and cameras returned back, sometimes precious family pictures, through the kindness of strangers. And in fact, 4 months ago, I was able to identify the person who that original photo belonged to. And 6 years later, through many hands of strangers, I was able to return that camera and those photos back to the original person who lost that camera 7 or 8 years ago.
Wow.
And that's just one story. Another story, the first scene in the play, in fact, is a dramatization of the most compelling, unforgettable phone call I ever took when I was a volunteer on the suicide prevention hotline before Post Secret. Again, coming back to this feeling again and again of how you might feel like you're alone with your secret, with your burden, whatever it might be. But when you realize you're not, it instantly changes from being this wall to a bridge that connects you with others and maybe a truer version of yourself.
So how do you dramatize that? Let's back up. Whose idea was it to turn it into a play? Was it your idea? Were you talked into it by somebody? How did it work?
Well, like a lot of post-secret, it's just been this fascinating journey where the secrets resonate with people. And I'm contacted by folks, you know, contacted by a book publisher, by the folks at TED. And I was contacted by a real talented group of playwrights, Justin, Khalil, TJ. They had this passion to bring the secrets and the stories behind them to the stage, kind of going from blog to stage. We were excited about that. I didn't know if it would work, so I invited them over to my house. They flew down from Canada, and for a couple of days, we went through that pyramid of secrets. I shared the stories. I talked about the connections. They'd seen some of the stuff that was happening online. At one point, somebody posted a secret saying they felt alone. They were thinking about ending their life by jumping off the bridge in San Francisco. I posted that secret on the web. That week, tens of thousands of people read that secret and joined a Facebook page called Please Don't Jump, which again spread virally around the world. People were writing messages on their hands, please don't jump. They were sending in their own personal stories to post on this Facebook, this compassionate response. Eventually, it led to a day in April, I think, being declared Please Don't Jump Day by the mayor of San Francisco. There was an event on Chrissy Fields, and it tells not just the compassion of strangers, but also some of the positive stories happening on the web in the digital world.
As I understand this, this is three actors on stage. Are they interacting with each other, or is it a series of monologues? Is it a series of blackout one-liners? What is it?
It's all of the above. We take secrets that have never been seen before, project them on the screen. It's multimedia with video, with music, with sound effects. At one point, we share final messages that people have been saving on their smartphones for friends or
family
members.
Phone messages.
That's right. The last message from a grandparent or from a friend that they've been keeping privately on their phone to kind of keep the spirit of the loved ones alive. And we have those that were shared with the project, and we get to share them with the audience. And that's a very poignant point.
How did it come to be that people would share with you these recordings of the final voice message recordings of loved ones who pass on?
Great question. Somebody sent me a secret on a postcard that said, I save the final message I heard from my grandmother when she called to sing me happy birthday when I was 21 years old. I wasn't there to get the message, but it's been on my phone ever since. And when I posted that secret, dozens of people were inspired by that image and that confession to email me the sound files of their final messages that they'd been keeping on their cell phones, you know, from parents or other loved ones, friends who had died but left a final message before they did, one reason or another. And yeah, that's you don't think of that as a confession or a secret, but again and again, that's a very memorable part of the performance.
This is not, I would think, the first production of this play, is it? I know nothing about this. So just you can just tell me.
We've had workshops before, but I'm super thrilled to be opening it here in Charlotte. So
this is really the first time it's been fully staged.
Yes.
Why Charlotte?
We've had phenomenal support from Blumenthal in terms of partnering in the production, in terms of the facilities. The people have been so supportive to get the word out and spread it. The thing about this performance is it's difficult for me to explain why it's so special. That's one of my challenges. So we really are relying on people early on coming to see it, feeling that special connection to it, and then telling their friends and neighbors about it. And that's our hope, to really allow this to become something special.
Are these local actors? Are you bringing people in from out of town for this?
They're all professional actors. Two are from New York, and one is from right here in Charlotte.
Is that Bobby? Okay. What, the one from Charlotte is... is the guy in the Morris Jenkins commercials, Bobby the repairman, who is a great actor, by the way. He's a terrific actor.
He's fantastic. And I'll tell you something. There are lots of surprises in this performance. And one of them is in the script early on, the actors are invited, well, it's almost mandatory, to share one of their true secrets from their own life.
Oh.
It can be the same secret every night. It can be something new. And in the past, that has been a real special moment in the play. And then later on, audience members are invited to share their secrets on postcards that can be read back to them later in Act Two.
Let's get back to this actor thing.
Do
they have to do that? Because that could be paralyzingly frightening, it seems to me.
I think it can be. But as you know, as a stage person yourself, those moments of spontaneity on stage when you know something is kind of unrehearsed and coming from the heart, that's the most compelling. And I also think, too, it conveys the spirit of this project and how it's about courage and vulnerability and sharing what's really true in your heart.
So this, for people who don't do theater, when you workshop a production, you do small, sometimes staged, sometimes not staged readings of material to see how it feels in front of an audience and see how an audience reacts to it. And sometimes you solicit the opinions of the audience to shape and sculpt the piece a little more. Now you're putting it up on its feet, you're putting it in front of an audience, and you're doing it as a play. You're here as part of this process. Are you directing? Are you just putting your two cents worth in? Or are you sitting back and going, okay, I just want to be an observer? What are you doing?
What am I doing?
How active are you in the process?
I don't know what my official hat is here, I would say. I think I just feel so connected to the project that any time it moves to a different platform, whether it's a book form or an art exhibit or the blog or an app, I really feel connected to it in a way where I want to make sure that the spirit of the project is conveyed in the right way. And I know with the people that we have working on the play and in the theater, that's going to happen. But even so, it's difficult for me to let it go. So I just want to be, you know, I've been an entrepreneur with businesses in my past life, and I feel that same kind of connection to this production. It's not something that I want to allow go down a road that I'm not connected to.
You're about a week from opening. It opens on April 22nd and runs through May 4th at the Booth. How do you feel about where you are in the process today?
Oh, super excited.
Very bad news. Very bad news.
No way.
You should feel badly about this at this stage. It's never going to work. My God.
The only thing I regret is that we haven't had cameras filming these rehearsals because they've been very emotional and special. Each of the actors said after that first day of rehearsals, where in rehearsal they had to share a true secret, it really became a production that had been different than anything else they'd ever done.
I want to ask you about one postcard that I saw on your TED Talk, and it was a photograph of the Twin Towers smoldering before their collapse, and it read, "Everyone who knew me before 9/11 believes I'm dead." What do you think that meant?
I think there's several ways you can interpret it. Sometimes with the limited amount of words to fit on a postcard, it allows you to play that secret or that confession out in a number of different stories. But I will say this, since I've talked about that card, people who have been involved with those type of tragedies have approached me and said sometimes people will use that as a way to start a new life to escape a bad marriage or financial debt.
Wow. Frank Warren is an author and the creator of PostSecret.com, and now PostSecret, the show, which opens April 22nd and runs through May 4th at the Booth Playhouse. It is the world premiere of this. Blumenthal Arts.org. Frank Warren, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you, Mike.